If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you love Selena?
Like, really love?
Whether you saw her live, saw the movie as a kid, or saw her looks all over TikTok, there's no shortage of reasons to stan the Queen of Tejano.
And stan we do over three whole episodes of our podcast, Becoming an Icon.
We're reminiscing as lifelong Selena fans, sharing hot takes and telling her story. Listen to Becoming an Icon on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search Becoming an Icon.
Hey everyone, welcome into the Fantasy Bros Football Podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Sylvester, joined as always by Mike Tagliere. And it's a great show today because we've got Kyle Yates too. What's going on, fellas?
Nothing much. It's good to be back. I'm sorry I missed last show. I was having a roof done. And if anybody's ever had a roof installed, you know how loud it can get. I kid you not. I thought someone was going to fall through my house and like into my office. I really thought that was going to happen. And they also started at like 6:45 in the morning, which was not ideal.
That's not cool, man.
It wasn't, but I didn't know what to say. I'm like, these guys are on the roof. They're like out there slaving in like 90 degree weather. I'm not going to go right out there and yell at them. So,
yeah. Well, the joke's on you because you missed out on a great show because we had Joe Pisapia on. Yeah. And we just had a big old party. Yates, it was a blast, wasn't it, man?
That was. You two are very loud. I will say that. You two are very loud when you get together. Yeah, it gets real loud there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what do you expect, man? We're trying to have fun here. I want to tell you what we're talking about today, okay? We're talking about mid-tier targets at the running back position. You know what? Let's not even talk about the targets. Let's talk about everybody in that round 5 to round 8-ish range. And then after that, we're going to talk coaching changes. Now, we do have giveaways going on. We just picked a winner for the Fielder's Choice Wallet giveaway. It's Lee. If you are a Lee and you didn't get an email, it's a different Lee. But we're also giving away a signed DeAndre Hopkins Cardinals helmet. This is full-sized. You can check out the details for this bad boy at fantasypros.com/contest. And if you want to enter, all you have to do, go on over to Apple Podcast or Stitcher and send us a screenshot of your review at contest@fantasypros.com. Again, details for this contest are at fantasypros.com/contest. And by the way, that DeAndre Hopkins helmet, it comes to us thanks to Pristine Auction. And you guys are going to love Pristine Auction. If you guys haven't already checked it out, here's what you need to do. Go to pristineauction.com, enter the registration code Fantasy Pros. It's free to sign up. You don't have to pay anything until you win your first auction. But if you enter that registration, it's going to give you $5 off. And just tell them that we sent you. That way we can keep doing these giveaways like the DeAndre Hopkins one. But at Pristine Auction, everything is guaranteed authentic from only the most trusted sources. And there are thousands, sometimes tens of thousands of items to bid on in a given week. My office is filled with stuff from Pristine Auction. I know Tags is as well. Yates probably is as well. But I got, like, for instance, I got an Eric Crouch. I don't know if you guys remember him. He was the quarterback for the Nebraska Cornhuskers. That's when I fell in love with football, watching Eric Crouch as the quarterback for the Nebraska Cornhuskers. And I got an Eric Crouch signed mini helmet for under $50, all things included, and it's a great feature in my office now. It's not just sports stuff as well. You can get a great watch for an extraordinarily cheap value. I don't know how they pull it off, but it is amazing. You're going to find great values at Pristine Auction. Just check out what they have for you. Again, that's Pristine auction.com. Hey guys, we're going to get in the football in just a second, but I just posted something on Twitter, and I got to get your input, okay? So I posted my top 10 sandwich toppings power rankings. First of all, Tags, Yates, what's your number one? And I put steak. And I've got a lot of people telling me steak is not a sandwich topping.
It's
and
not
these
a sandwich
people
topping.
Are
it's not a
fools.
Sandwich topping.
Oh, I hate you guys. What is wrong with you?
That is a sandwich.
How is that in any way a topping?
You've never had a steak sandwich?
I've had a steak sandwich. It's called a steak sandwich.
Right. So it's a sandwich topping.
No. It is not a topping, dude.
A topping is something that goes on top of the meat.
Dude, meat and cheese count as toppings.
A topping's like mustard, like horseradish, all that stuff. That's topping.
No. It's anything that goes inside of the sandwich. Okay, so what's your number one then of anything that goes inside the sandwich? Maybe I just need to phrase it differently. Sorry, guys.
What's the best sandwich, you should say then?
Yeah.
Well, the best sandwich has like 10 toppings in it.
I'm not going to power rank
10 different sandwiches with 10 different toppings in them.
I'm all down with an Italian sub. Italian subs are where it's at. I actually, I really dig like Quiznos and Potbellies. Those are really, really good sandwiches. I know they're franchises and typically those are terrible. And Subway used to be good and then it like went downhill. But I like those sandwiches. I don't visit a lot of high-end delis or anything like that. So I'm sure there's better sandwiches out there. But Italian sub at like Quiznos or Potbellies, fantastic.
Yates, what do you have for us, man?
Man, a meatball sub, you can't. I don't think you can go wrong with a good meatball sub.
Boring.
Wow.
I'm just messing with you, man. You guys pooped on my steak topping thing.
But then I'm a sucker for just a good old-fashioned turkey melt or something like that. Man, I don't think you can go wrong with that either.
Sure. All right. Well, let's talk some football. We've got 12 running backs who are going in this range that we're going to talk about today. First of all, Mark Ingram, James Conner, Devin Singletary. These three are back-to-back-to-back in terms of ADP. Which of them do you prefer most, Tags? I'm going to name them again. Mark Ingram, James Conner, Devin Singletary.
Of those three, I'm going to probably take my shot with James Conner. As long as he's healthy, he's a guy that's going to be a workhorse in that team. That team scores plenty of fantasy points. And if for whatever reason, they decide to drop the pass attempts with Ben Roethlisberger coming off the shoulder surgery, I mean, it's James Conner that would benefit. And if his arm isn't as big as it used to be, Ben Roethlisberger's I'm speaking about, then James Conner is going to get some more of those dump off passes. I do believe they're going to involve Anthony McFarland as like a Chris Thompson type player. And that's fine. It might be better for James Conner's health. But we've seen him perform as a top 12 running back. And when he was on the field last year, he was a top 12 running back. It was just a matter of staying healthy. So I'm going to go ahead and say that this one is not even really that close for me. It's definitely going to be James Conner.
It's interesting because yesterday we did a podcast with Joe, or I guess it was 2 days ago, and we were talking about players to avoid. And James Conner was one of the names that came up, and Tags was not here to defend him.
Well, what was said? What happened?
Well, it's that he's got some injury risk, man, that he's been dealing with this stuff, and we don't know if he's going to continue to be this, you know, three down back. They went out and got Anthony McFarland.
Well, Mike Tomlin said that he's going to be the workhorse as long as he's healthy. That's Mike Tomlin has already come out and said that. So I believe Mike Tomlin. They've always been a one back system. It hasn't been like even Benny
and he's
Snell.
One of these coaches that tends to do what he says. A lot of these coaches, like if you hear Pete Carroll saying something,
right,
do the opposite because he's lying to you. Mike Tomlin tells the truth.
Yeah, I won't pretend that there's not. I mean, there's risk involved with James Conner, 100%. Everybody knows the risk involved with him. He's dealt with a lot of injuries over his career.
Kind of built into the price, though, right?
Yeah, it is baked into the price because if it wasn't, like, you'd see him going up in the range of, I would say, around the 13th or 14th running back off the board, right after the guys like Miles Sanders. I would take him over Leonard Fournette if I knew that James Conner was going to play all 16 games.
Sure. Yeah, I think I would do the same. Well, if I knew he was going to play all 16 games and continue to get all of these touches, I think James Conner could be a top 5 or 6 fantasy football running back if that's the case. I'm a little bit worried about it, though. Yates, where do you stand? And do you like him more than Singletary and Ingram?
Yeah, it all depends on what you need in that spot, right? We're talking about mid-tier running backs. You're talking about someone who you're potentially taking as your RB2 or RB3, depending on how the first few rounds went. So I think if you need like stability, if you need just someone who's going to be a steady RB2, I think you need to be looking at Mark Ingram because I think that he doesn't have the ceiling that James Conner does because of J.K. Dobbins now being in town. And so I think, but he's going to be the lead back in this system. He's still going to get work, plenty of scoring opportunities. We know that he was insanely productive last year. And so I think that if you need just someone who can be that RB2 steadily, then that's where you should be looking. If you, you know, picked a safe option towards the top of your draft and you need upside, then James Conner should be where you're looking because, again, like Tag said, he has insane upside if he can stay healthy.
I think it's a question with every running back, like, can he stay healthy? I mean, James Conner, I guess, has more injury risk than Ingram, but also Ingram's competing with J.K. Dobbins, who's really good. They had a first-round grade on him. Conner's competing with Anthony McFarland. Who else do they have in that backfield?
Benny Snell.
Conner's the guy if he stays healthy. I would much rather have Conner than Ingram. And Granted, he's not my favorite of the group that we're going to talk about today, because my favorite guy is a couple picks after these guys. But of these three, Ingram, Connor, Singletary, I'm taking Connor.
Yeah, I wanted to say something before we get further into the show, because I'm going to reference it throughout. I've been working on this like stat to go through, like when a running back gets a carry inside the 5 yard line, it's obviously worth a lot more than when they're on their own 25 yard line. And I basically went through everything inside the 10, inside the 20, and then non-red zone touches, where their touches took place, and basically figured out the opportunity that was expected out of every single running back, wide receiver, all that. So running back is one of the most predictable positions in terms of opportunity and where players actually finish. And the best way for me to describe this, the top 14 players in opportunity, there was just one running back who did not finish top 14 in actual, like in fantasy football. That player was Le'Veon Bell, who we all know was pretty terrible last year. That Jets team is probably terrible. Still finishes the number 17 running back, but he had the eighth most opportunity. So basically, your opportunity as a running back, it's not going to veer too much from where you actually finish. So we're looking for actual opportunity. Mark Ingram last year was the number 23 running back in opportunity. Again, we know that he got some touches inside the red zone, and you're like, well, maybe those were worth more. I went through every single touch, and he was right there alongside Marlon Mack and Miles Sanders. And Miles Sanders, as you know, Bobby, did not have a big role until the second half of the season. So Mark Ingram, he finished number 8, but his actual expected outcome was 23. And now you add J.K. Dobbins to that backfield, I am officially worried about Mark Ingram. So there's like, not only do you have Lamar Jackson due for some rushing touchdown regression towards the mean, where he should have had 12 touchdowns last year on the ground instead of the 5 that he did. And then you add in Dobbins. Mark Ingram, right, to me,
I'm
is like
him big time.
He's a flex type player for me. I'm not drafting. I'll take the risk with Connor over someone like Mark Ingram, who's not going to win you a fantasy title.
Okay, so let's talk about Devin Singletary then. What do you think about Devin Singletary, Jags?
I don't like him. Speaking of that report, in terms of opportunity, he ranked as the number 33 running back right next to Peyton Barber. It was terrible.
No.
And the reason that Devin Singletary is so low on that list is because he's not getting carries when they matter most. I've talked about this before, in the fact that he has received just 2 carries inside the 5 yard line over his career. Frank Gore, we know, was not very efficient. Josh Allen continually carries the ball in the red zone. They signed Zach Moss, who reminds me of Kareem Hunt, a guy that's more of like a banger.
What? Get out of here,
he is
Tags.
A banger.
This isn't a hot take episode.
I need you to go back and watch some Zach Moss film.
Oh, man, because we're going to fight.
Like, it's all about his health. If he could stay healthy, because that's been a problem for him throughout his college years. But Zach Moss, they've already said that he's going to walk into that Gore role, which means that Devin Singletary is third in line for goal line carries on that team and would require an injury, essentially, to get back into that top 15 conversation. So if you draft someone like Devin Singletary, can he be a flex? Yeah, absolutely. But is he going to win you a fantasy title? Absolutely not without injury to someone like Zach Moss or Josh Allen.
And even so, it's not going to happen, right?
Yeah, I'm not drafting him.
It's just not going to happen.
No, Devin Singletary is not going to be on any of my fantasy teams based on where he's being drafted as the 23rd running back off the board. You're asking for trouble.
I have no shares of him. I mean, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, maybe 6 guys I'd rather have than him who are lower in ADP, just at the running back position.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Yates, I assume you agree Devin Singletary is a no-go in the 4th round.
Yeah, that's a ridiculous price tag for him. Where I think, you know, you're talking about him never being more than a change of pace running back, especially now that you add in Zach Moss, and then what Tags is saying, that the goal line opportunities just simply aren't there for him. The scoring, he has to score from, you know, breaking big plays. Now, is he electric? Is he elusive? Absolutely.
I mean, he's electric if a 4.65 40-yard dash is electric. I mean, that's like Benny Snell speed, man.
I knew someone was going to bring that up.
Well, I'm talking about his short area quickness. Like, he's not going to be someone who's this, you know, this breakaway a huge play, but he, I mean, put on the film, he can break away from any defender as far as he's very elusive in short areas. So
yes, he
that's
is.
What I'm talking about. But then also, I think that we need to bring this up, that he has area to improve. He saw 29 receptions last year and only averaged 6.7 yards per reception. That's actually really low when you look across, you know, historic stats for the running back position as far as the yards per reception. With his skill set, I think that could jump up to an 8.5. So I think you're talking about at least a little bit of a, you know, boost from last year. But again, we're talking about James Conner coming with injury risk. We can't look at Devin Singletary and pretend that that doesn't exist either. We saw him miss time, and he's a very small running back. He's 5'7", 207 is, I think, off the top of my head. So he's a smaller running back. He needs to be kept in a change of pace role, which limits his overall ceiling for fantasy football.
And he wasn't even particularly efficient in the passing game last year either.
He's not fast. He's not big. He's just really good at being behind an offensive line and reading the openings. I was joking with you, Yates, about Zach Moss being electric, because I agree. You watch him on tape, and he's a big play waiting to happen. And you look back at Kareem Hunt. Like, Kareem Hunt is unbelievably fast, right? He ran a 4.6, 240. Like, that kind of stuff happens. When you watch him on tape, Zach Moss is faster than he showed in the combine. So.
Well, that's what the 40-yard dash for running backs is a little bit overrated. Like, we can fall in love with these running backs who run in the 4.4s, you know, like a Justice Hill, like these types of players. But that's not how you consistently win at the running back position. You consistently win with agility and short area quickness. And so these guys, you know, like placing precedent on the three cone drill and things like that, that is super important for running backs, because the, you know, the opportunities where a running back is able to break away a 40-yard run or see open field, you know, is very minimal. So that's where, you know, we can look back at some of these great running backs in the NFL and we can go, well, they ran a 4.6 or, you know, 40 or whatever. How are they so good? Well, it's because they're quick in short areas. That's, I wanted to mention that really quick.
And it's totally different with pads on. It's totally different carrying the football. I mean, when these guys are running, they're running with both of their arms as fast as they can. When they're carrying a football, you can't do that stuff. It's totally different. So the 40-yard dash, I don't buy too much into it with running backs. Obviously, wide receivers, you're able to get more separation, which helps you get open and catch more balls. But let's keep moving here, okay? So we talked about these first three. The next two, David Johnson. I feel like he's kind of a James Conner light, right? He's got more injury risk. I don't think he's as good as James Conner at this stage in his career. I don't like the offense as much in Houston. I think Houston's not going to be as good this year. And then right after them, we've got Jonathan Taylor, who's actually my favorite of all the players we've mentioned so far. Yates, why don't you go first this time? How do you feel about these two? And where would you rank them with Ingram, Connor, and Singletary?
Yeah, it's going to be Jonathan Taylor is the guy who I really like in comparison to David Johnson. I think David Johnson comes with absolute concerns. You know, we're talking about the last time that we saw him on a football field, it wasn't great. He looked like a shell of his former self. And the way that we saw David Johnson be so valuable to fantasy football years ago, and now we're talking about years ago, right, is that he was a dynamic pass catcher. He just saw a ton of targets. Well, now you're looking at Houston, and we've talked about it on this podcast, that that's not something that they feature the running back position as far as targets regularly. Then you're also talking about Duke Johnson is there. Well, he's a phenomenal pass catcher in his own right, and I expect him to fill that role. He's not someone who you give 200 plus carries to on the ground. So then there is a very, very limited ceiling here for David Johnson. Everything has to go his way. He has to be fully healthy. He has to stay healthy. He has to receive 250 plus carries on the ground, because he hasn't been historically efficient on the ground either. He's not someone who's averaging 4.75 yards per carry, something like that. So he has a very, very limited ceiling. He's someone like a Mark Ingram, who I would prefer to have him as my RB3, you know, potential flex. Like, but with his current price tag, I'm not going to get him at that price.
Tags, what do you think, Ben?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of with you on this one. David Johnson's not a guy that, I mean, a lot of people don't know this, but David Johnson's not a great in-between-the-tackles runner. And I like David Johnson, the player. I just think you have to use him in a specific situation. Like, he hasn't averaged more than, like, 3.7 yards per carry since, I think, 2016. So David Johnson isn't that guy. The offensive line in Houston isn't particularly great. It got better with the addition of Laremy Tunsil at left tackle, but that was more of a pass-protecting thing. The Texans haven't used their running backs in the passing game. Deshaun Watson is a mobile quarterback, and what those quarterbacks do is they're able to scramble in the pocket and buy themselves time, keep their eyes down the field, whereas someone like Tom Brady is going to see pressure coming. He's going to immediately dump down, and that's why you don't see a lot of very high target numbers for the Houston Texans running backs. 79 targets last year combined with all of them. Duke Johnson, obviously one of the better pass catching running backs in the league. Duke Johnson is probably the better running back at this stage in their career, if I'm being honest, than David Johnson. So that's why Duke Johnson to me is a better late round pick than taking someone like David Johnson in the fifth round. Again, I'm not going to sit here and say that David Johnson's a horrendous pick, because there are 150 targets available with the departure of DeAndre Hopkins. But at the same time, we have to read the room and understand David Johnson's strengths and what the Texans' strengths are, and they really don't align. And that's why I thought it was such a puzzling move to trade for a running back who's at the end of his career on a team that doesn't have a defense, is in kind of in rebuild mode. So nothing about that trade meant any sense. So yeah, I'm going to go ahead and say Jonathan Taylor is the guy I want. And I understand Nyheim Hines is there, but guys, Nyheim Hines didn't get touches last year when Jonathan Taylor wasn't on the team. So he has to be on the field to get those touches. And Nyheim Hines isn't someone that Frank Reich obviously trusts. And knowing that Marlon Mack was there and they had him under contract and they still drafted Jonathan Taylor in the second round, it kind of tells you all that you need to know. So yeah, he's very Nick Chubb-like running back. I would much rather take the upside with him playing behind what is probably a, they may not be the best, but I'll say top three offensive line in football.
Right. Right. So do you like him more than James Conner then, Tex, for redraft?
Yes, I would take Jonathan Taylor because I don't believe health is a concern with him. Yeah, he's shown the ability to handle a giant workload. The upside is tremendous for both of those guys. I just think that one has a better chance of staying healthy.
Okay, so that means you've got him in your top 20. How high does it go? Do you have him over Le'Veon Bell, Todd Gurley, Melvin Gordon?
I have Taylor at 17 among running backs, over Le'Veon Bell, over Melvin Gordon. I would contemplate taking him over Leonard Fournette.
Dang, what about Chris Carson?
Yes, I would take him over Carson. There's a lot of, I want to be clear about the Seahawks running back situation. There's a lot that needs to be played out in the preseason because I don't know how they're going to handle it. I don't know Rashad Penny, if he's going to be on the PUP list, if, you know, how we see these guys used in preseason, because Pete Carroll, he will give the best guy the job. And Chris Carson probably is the best, but he's also coming off a hip injury that ended his season and that they thought was going to require surgery, but ultimately didn't. So I don't know. There's a lot of question marks with Chris Carson.
So it's interesting. I've got Taylor the highest of this group, but I can't put him ahead of any of those guys that I mentioned. Chris Carson, Melvin Gordon, Le'Veon Bell, Todd Gurley, Leonard Fournette, maybe over Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And I know that you guys hate me for this, but I just think Taylor has a more certain path to immediate playing time. And he's also behind a better offensive line. Now, I think Jonathan Taylor's the better talent. Now, in this offense, Clyde Edwards-Helaire has a much higher ceiling. But what is Taylor's ceiling? Like, if the Colts give him the job from day one behind this offensive line, the type of running back he can handle all three downs. What is his upside, Tag?
It's Nick Chubb. It's Nick Chubb territory because they still do run somewhat of a timeshare, and I don't think that's going to change. They're not going to just automatically go to a one-back system. They're going to involve Nyheim Hines. He's going to get, you know, his 40, 50 targets or whatever. Marlon Mack, they're going to use him a little bit. But so there is a three-way timeshare there where Nick Chubb is a two-way. And someone mentioned that to me on Twitter because we had talked about, I said, what's the difference between Nick Chubb and Jonathan Taylor? You know, guys that aren't going to be used heavily in the passing game, have competition for touches. One's behind a better offensive line, the other and one has lesser competition, but he brought up the fact that it's a three-way timeshare. I think that you're going to slowly see a lot of these guys fade into oblivion where they're not going to be, you're never going to start Nyheim Hines and you're never going to start Marlon Mack. So therefore, they're non-factors where someone like Kareem Hunt is a fantasy factor. You're still going to be able to play him in the flex. So yeah, I'm definitely in on Jonathan Taylor here. I think his ceiling is Nick Chubb type level like numbers because I don't see him getting any more than like 25, 30 targets. So that's going to limit him to that. It's still low-end RB1 territory. He can get into that.
Yates, anything you want to add before we move on?
I mean, if we're talking about his overall ceiling, if something happens, I mean, and Marlon Mack has proven that he can't fully stay healthy. Now, maybe a less workload can help alleviate that. But if something happens to Marlon Mack, talking about, what, 280 plus carries for Jonathan Taylor, easy? You know, and he's proven that he can handle a significant workload. So I think the ceiling is there. However, you know, some things do have to go his way. Otherwise, I think he's going to be a very, very safe option. And he's a phenomenal talent. He's a phenomenal runner. He's not going to get the target totals that you need with some of these other top guys. So that's why I like the comparison of what Tag said there with, you know, Nick Chubb. That's kind of where we need to be thinking about him. But this offense is going to run through him and Marlon Mack. If something happens to Marlon Mack, then it's going to be all Jonathan Taylor.
You know, and everyone hears if something was to happen. Every single preseason, guys, one starting running back or someone in a committee is out for the season. Last year, it was Lamar Miller. The year before that, I think it was a suspension that happened. The year before that, James Conner took over. These things happen every single year, and we need to be prepared for when they do happen. What would we do? If Marlon Mack was to go down, Jonathan Taylor would be a second-round pick easy. Easy, right, guys?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, I love his upside. We're going to keep moving here. We've got seven more running backs to cover before we get to coaching changes. But first, I just want to mention, we've been doing a new podcast called Game Changers, and it's hosted by Dan Harris. You guys know Dan. He comes on this show every once in a while, and he is so much fun. So what he's doing, he's interviewing some of the biggest names in the fantasy sports industry to just shed some light on their journeys, what it took for them to reach their height in their profession. We've already done shows with industry favorites like Mike Wright from the Fantasy Footballers, Brad Evans, formerly from Yahoo, Jake Seeley, just to name a few. He's with The Athletic. Our latest episode is with Scott Fish, creator of the biggest league in fantasy sports, the Scott Fish Bowl. If you're interested in learning what it takes to succeed in the fantasy industry, or just learn more about the trailblazers in the fantasy sports world, then I urge you guys to check out the show. Again, it's called the Game Changers Podcast. Dan is doing a great job with it, isn't he, guys?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, he's just so easy to talk to, and he'll throw little jabs here and there, and it just makes for a fun conversation.
Yeah, everyone is so comfortable talking to him, and he gets the best out of everybody. It's a blast.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, guys, let's keep moving here. Obviously, it comes to the Raheem Mostert tier. Everyone knows what I think, so I'm just going to keep my mouth shut. But in this Raheem Mostert tier, we've also got David Montgomery. Would you rank either of these two ahead of any of the five we've already talked about, Tags?
David Montgomery, I would rank over Chris Carson, David Johnson, and Mark Ingram.
Over Chris Carson?
Yeah, I guess I have my concerns about Chris Carson.
10 spots higher in ECR for running backs alone.
So Seattle's kind of, reading between the lines here, Bobby. Seattle not only drafted a running back in the fourth round, but they also made it a point to go out and sign veteran Carlos Hyde. Tells me that they're not entirely convinced that it could be both Chris Carson and Rashad Penny that they're worried about. They've never been shy about that, and they're going to put it up to a competition. It could be more. They might be wanting a better pass-catching running back out of the backfield than Chris Carson this year, because this team is going to fall behind in more games. That defense is far from ideal. But David Montgomery, in terms of that list of actual opportunity, I talked about those top 14 running backs that every single one except for Le'Veon Bell finished top 14 at year's end. David Montgomery ranked number 15. He had just five fewer opportunity points than Derrick Henry. He had more.
No way. Are you serious?
So that's what I'm saying. So the opportunity is there. Did you know? Here's a fun fact.
Wow.
In red zone carries for your team, Leonard Fournette led the league. He had 100% of the Jaguars carries inside the 5-yard line. Number two on that list, David Montgomery, 87.5% of the Bears red zone carries went to him.
The best part is that didn't change this season.
Nope. Nothing changed.
Right. They didn't add anything. I love what Brad Evans called him last year. The rabid hippopotamus. When you watch him run, he's got some talent. It was just a horrible offensive line.
Yeah, and that's the part that I am worried about, the offensive line. But there's a lot of guys in this list that are going to pop up on the offensive line that you're worried about. I remember back last preseason, David Montgomery had a game. There was a run that he had, and everybody's like, why is Mike Davis playing? This guy's electric, and he breaks tackles. He bounces off tacklers. And now all of a sudden, people are like, David Montgomery sucks. He's boring. It reminds me of, like, the Melvin Gordon, like, after the first year in the league.
Right, when again, he had zero touchdowns and everyone gave up on him, even though he's a superstar.
And he was going in the same area of drafts. I think he was going in the RB25 range that year. So I'm not saying David Montgomery is going to be as good as Melvin Gordon. I'm not at all. But what I am saying is, by the opportunity here that they didn't change anything, he is going to get those red zone carries. I have him as my number 21 running back, right behind James Conner. So, I mean, I like Montgomery. And here's another stat I have for you guys. This one I put on Twitter and people gave me a lot of crap about it because they said he's not good. But over the last 10 years, there have been 125 running backs who have seen 240 carries. All right. That's a lot of running backs, 125 of them. None of them finished worse than RB25. None of them. So therefore,
he's going RB26 right now.
Right. So he's being drafted at his absolute floor, because I don't think anybody would dispute, if he's healthy, he's getting 240 carries in this offense, because Tariq Cohen, never going to get there. So yeah, Yates, you're with me on David Montgomery. I'm fairly certain of this to take the opportunity.
I like David Montgomery too. Don't hear me wrong. I'd rather have him than Devin Singletary, man.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
I'd rather have him than Mark Ingram.
Same.
Yep. You know, Tags, you said, like, I'm with you. No, I'm not, because I have David Montgomery at RB13 right now.
Oh, man!
And this is on the back of, like, we're talking about pure opportunity. I'm talking about everything that could have gone wrong for David Montgomery last year absolutely did. Right? You're talking about horrible quarterback play. You're talking about horrible offensive line play. You're talking about, like, everything that absolutely could have gone wrong for David Montgomery did. Now, when we're looking at, and what Tags brought up, that the opportunity is absolutely there. So I'm projecting David Montgomery for 270 plus carries on the season, because it's very hard to, I'm not going to give Ryan Nall a ton of carries. I'm not going to give Artavis Pierce, you know, I don't even know where Artavis Pierce played ball in college. So, like, I'm not going to give them a ton of work. I'm not giving Tariq Cohen more than 90 carries on the season. You know, he's just never been that player. So even if I give David Montgomery 270 carries on the season, guys, I only have him projected for 3.9 yards per carry. It's not great. But what I am saying is that
David Johnson was the RB1 with 3.9 yards per carry, though. Like, it can help.
Right, but because he got a ton of work. And then what Tags brought up with Houston and Deshaun Watson being a mobile quarterback, they do move to Nick Foles being the starter, which is what I am projecting. If they do move to Nick Foles, Nick Foles is not a mobile quarterback. He's going to be looking to, you know, he's not going to be able to extend the plays. He's going to be looking to check the ball down in those instances where the play is not there downfield. He's going to be looking to check it down. That means an increase in targets for David Montgomery. I think David Montgomery is one of the smartest picks you can make in fantasy football this year.
I like David Montgomery. I think you guys maybe are a little bit too excited about him, but I'm not going to blame you at all. There's reason to be excited. I mean, he's a super safe pick at this stage in the draft. You can get him in the sixth round right now, but you can also get Raheem Mostert, guys. And Raheem Mostert is in a much better offense. I think he's in a similar role. Now, I get it. Some people are worried about Tevin Coleman. And of course, with Kyle Shannon, you always have to be worried about that. But he has a legitimate RB1 upside. Do you guys not agree?
I do not agree. With Raheem Mostert, for him to hit RB1 numbers, he has to do it on the back of 10 touchdowns and averaging over 5.5 yards per carry.
He had 10 touchdowns on 137 rushes last year.
Do you realize how ridiculous that is?
And he had like 15 in the playoffs, man. This is just what the 49ers do. He led the league in yards per attempt. He was incredible in that offensive line. And the offense is built for a running back like this.
The offense is built to share the load. And so when you have guys like Raheem Mostert, Tevin Coleman, and Tevin Coleman, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Tags, but Tevin Coleman was dealing with some nagging injuries last year too. So then now I'm projecting that you do still have Jerick McKinnon, who I don't know if I'm necessarily feeling confident that he's going to be on the roster. But then I love Savon Ahmed. So an undrafted free agent out of Washington. I believe he fits this offense perfectly. So I believe that he's going to now assume the Matt Breida role. So then now you're talking about this offense is going to be split up. For them to repeat what they did last year, they were insanely efficient, insanely effective on defense. I don't believe that that is sustainable. So now you're projecting some work to move away from the running backs. It is very difficult for me to find more than to give Raheem Mostert more than 200 carries on the ground. If that's the case, for him to hit RB1 numbers, he has to be doing it on 5.5 yards per carry or more and 10 plus touchdowns, which I just do not feel confident projecting.
Yeah, Bobby, I'm going to give you a couple names here that had more opportunity than Raheem Mostert last year.
Well, yeah, he didn't play until week 11. Do you know what happened after he played in week 11?
He was available. That's what I'm saying. Like, the coach had him available.
Yeah, and then he won the job. How many times have we seen these guys win the job? Arian Foster wasn't the starting running back. He was available, and then he became the freaking RB1, man.
Mostert's 28 years old.
This happens every single year. Alvin Kamara wasn't the RB1. He was available. Why didn't he succeed? Well, look, guess what he did next year? As soon as he took over the job, he was a monster. That's what
he was good as a rookie.
Mostert has done. He's the starter now, period.
Dude, Raheem Mostert is not a rookie that came into the league and won the job.
Right.
He's been on the roster. Kyle Shanahan knows exactly who he is.
I get it, but from the time he took over, he was the number one running back in fantasy football ahead of Christian McCaffrey.
He never took over, first off.
Yeah, you need to define the word takeover.
I mean, led the running back backfield in snaps. I'm not saying he's going to be a three-down back. I'm saying from the time he led the team in snaps, he was the RB1 over Christian McCaffrey.
He had two games over 13 carries.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you.
That's not a workhorse running back.
And I'm not saying it's sustainable. I'm not saying he's going to be the RB1. I'm saying in this offense, he can be a top 12 running back.
Raheem Mostert was available for all 16 games to Kyle Shanahan. Here's some players that had more opportunity. DeAndre Washington, Jalen Samuels, LeSean McCoy.
Right, I don't care about this stat. I mean, I guess the people listening can decide what they think. But
I don't
once
care
he took
because
over,
it doesn't match my narrative,
awesome.
Damn it.
Right, exactly. I mean, look at his game logs, though. From week 11, when he took over the job, 6 carries for 45 yards and a touchdown. 19 carries for 146 yards and a touchdown. That's great. Okay, I'm not going to argue against that game. 10 for 69 and a touchdown. 14 for 54 and a touchdown. 11 for 53 and a touchdown. 10 for 57 and 2 touchdowns. Do you see?
Going to the playoffs. 29 carries against the Green Bay Packers and 4 touchdowns for 220 yards, dude. 220 yards
that.
In the playoffs.
Listen to me. I'm not trying to take that away from Raheem Mostert. I believe that he is talented, and I'm not going to try to dispute someone getting 220 carries and 4 touchdowns.
220 carries. That would be amazing.
Right. 220 yards. You said that he has RB1 potential or that he could be in that conversation. I'm saying no, because the common denominator in all of those games where he was an extremely valuable fantasy running back was a touchdown. And touchdowns are extremely unpredictable, especially when you factor in that there are other mouths to feed in this offense now with Tevin Coleman. I mean, you pick your poison there with Savon Ahmed or Jermichael Hasty. One of them is going to be on the roster. And then Jerick McKinnon. So he has to be scoring touchdowns every single week for him to be relevant, because otherwise he's not going to be able to get enough work to be a consistent RB2 with upside.
I'm betting on the touchdowns. And you know what? There were a lot of people who were like, dude, I'm not drafting LeGarrette Blount. Like, it used to be the opener to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/fantasypros, where Tags was making fun of me for wanting to draft LeGarrette Blount. You know what freaking happened? He finishes the RB7 because you can predict touchdowns. And LeGarrette Blount was horrible, man. He was horrible, and he had 18 touchdowns.
I mean, the part in your favor in this conversation, Bobby, is that his price tag is super low.
Correct.
Right, so what's the risk?
Bobby, right. Wait, hold on. Where do you have him ranked, Bobby? I want to know.
RB 21.
Okay, so you're not that. If you're that confident,
I don't have him in the 13th.
But I need you to go full Kyle Yates here and put him up to number 13.
No, because there's risk. There's a lot of risk here.
I have Mostert.
All I'm saying is I'm drafting Raheem Mostert in the fifth round in every single league, and he's going to be there.
I think it's in the conversation though of a Mark Ingram. Like, I don't believe that he has true upside, which was what you said, Bobby, was that he has this insane upside. Like, Mark Ingram, I don't believe has the
not
upside.
Insane upside, but he has more upside than David Montgomery.
I believe he can be a. I believe he can be a safe option as an RB2, RB3, you know, flex option, which is where I think you can get him. But to say that he has this insane ceiling, I think is false.
I think Ronald Jones has just as high a ceiling, and he's a lot cheaper.
Ronald Jones does have a nice ceiling. We'll keep moving on. He's actually not in this group we're going to talk about, but at the end, I'm going to get some more names that you think maybe belong in this group. So we're going up to ADP 90-ish to get into that eighth round. So let's keep going here. After Mostert and Montgomery, there's a big chunk, four running backs here. Darius Geis?
No, thank you.
No, he does not belong on this list. Kareem Hunt. Okay, he definitely belongs. DeAndre Swift, I don't love the offense. I don't really see much upside. And then Cam Akers. Look, I get it. There's some smart people who have come on our show and said they're drafting Cam Akers. It's not going to be me. I'm not drafting him, but I'm definitely drafting him over Darius Geis. Yates, you get to go first on this one. Rank these four for us. Hunt, Swift, Akers, Geis.
How in the world is Darius Geis RB27 in ADP right now?
He might be like RB3 on Washington.
I have absolutely no idea why in the world he is all the way up at RB27. I will, like, oh my word, I just do not get it. So Darius Geis is obviously going to be last in this tier for me. I would go Kareem Hunt would be the first one because he has some standalone value as a PPR option, but then also he's a league winner if Nick Chubb goes down. In these mid rounds, I'm willing to take some chances on guys that if everything breaks their way, that they could be league winners. So Kareem Hunt is not just someone who you have to bet on the starter going down, which I don't necessarily like doing in the mid rounds, but then also he has standalone value. So Kareem Hunt, and then I will go DeAndre Swift because I believe he is going to be the lead option in this offense. I'm not exactly projecting that it's going to equate to a ton of, you know, high-end fantasy value, but I believe that he's the next in line here. And then Cam Akers, I will go with him above Darius Geis because I do believe that Cam Akers is going to be the pass-catching option out of the backfield. That was what I saw and envisioned for him on when watching his tape at Florida State. And I think that that is the role that he excels in. So I believe Daryl Henderson will be the in-between the tackles runner and Cam Akers will be, you know, he'll get some carries, but I believe he's going to be the pass-catching option out of the backfield there.
Just way too much risk for me with Akers and not enough upside because the Rams offense is just going to suck in my opinion.
That's the thing is, like, people talked about Cam Akers and they're like, oh, the reason he was bad in college is because his offensive line was so bad. Well, guys, he's
comparatively
going behind,
it's worse.
He's going behind, like, the Rams have a bottom three offensive line in football, and it's terrible. So that's the part where I'm a little confused by the love there. They didn't target their running backs in the passing game last year, and knowing that the tight ends have taken a step forward and all this, it's difficult for me to say that Cam Akers should be drafted very high. I know why people want to do it, but I'll take the guy that's a guaranteed starter in DeAndre Swift over Cam Akers. I will certainly take both of them over Darius Geis because that is just a mess in the Washington backfield and it's a terrible team anyway. So I don't know why anyone would want to attack that backfield. It makes no sense.
Right. And it's not like Geis is going to catch a ton of passes either. They're going to be playing from behind and Geis is going to get, if he's the starter, 11 carries a game and two targets. Like, in an offense that bad, that is not going to cut it. Like, that's like drafting Patrick Laird last year and hoping that it's going to work out. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, no, I have Swift actually over Kareem Hunt in my rankings because Swift is a guy that I'm projecting to have that lead role, whereas Kareem Hunt isn't. But if you wanted to draft Hunt over Swift, I have no issue with that because, again, as Yates mentioned, you not only get that flex type value, which isn't necessarily guaranteed because it's obviously a new team. It's a new coaching staff there. So it's not going to be the same role as last year, but they're still going to involve him. There's a reason they kept him on the roster with a second round tender, I think it was. And obviously has the handcuff value. If anything happened to Nick Chubb, I mean, Kareem Hunt's a league winner.
A lot of times we see these, you know, these guys like DeAndre Swift, really talented, and he's clearly better than Kerryon Johnson. Kerryon Johnson's good. He's just been injured. But they don't start until week four or week five. I know I'm starting Kareem Hunt all 16 games of the season if he's healthy, regardless of what his role is, because he's going to be used in the passing game. We saw it last year.
But that's the thing is we can't use last year's stats because it's an entirely new offense. We don't know how much he's going to be on the field. I do believe that he's going to be used in the passing game because, again, I don't know why they would retain him if he wasn't going to be. But I don't think that we can just say because he was this guy last year that he's going to have that exact role, because otherwise Nick Chubb better come down boards real fast if that's the case.
That's a good point, man. Yep, that's a good point. I'm still mad at you guys about Raheem Mostert, but
Bobby got heated.
I got heated for entertainment purposes. Like, I hope everyone who listens to the show, like, if you're not watching on YouTube and seeing me smile while I'm doing it.
That's not true. Bobby sends me hate messages after the show. That's not true.
You probably think that, like, we all hate each other. We're totally best friends. And it's just fun to argue with your friends about fantasy football, right? Especially when you know that you're right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
yeah. All right, guys. Final four. After Cam Akers, DeAndre Swift, Kareem Hunt, Darius Geis. I think we would all put all four of these guys ahead of Darius Geis, but Sony Michel, Marlon Mack, Damian Williams, Kerryon Johnson. Yates, you're first again. Of these four, do you want any of them?
Nope.
There's one of them
no.
that I would draft, but I'm not
Damian
excited
Williams,
about it.
We know.
It's Damian yep. Williams, right, and I'm only drafting him around his ADP.
Yeah, no, I don't want any of these guys, especially when you factor in their draft cost. Sony Michel saw, I think, a little bit of a bump because of Cam Newton signing. But again, we have to now factor in that I think the offense is going to be a little bit more balanced. However, I am projecting that Cam Newton's going to take away quite a few of those overall rushing attempts, and then he's going to take away looks in the red zone. So the offense should be better with Cam Newton, and that creates more scoring opportunities. But then I think Cam Newton has the profile to be able to take away those scoring opportunities from Michelle. Kerryon Johnson, I think, you know, I said it with DeAndre Swift that he's going to be the lead back. So that leaves Kerryon Johnson kind of on the outside looking in for fantasy purposes. Marlon Mack, same thing, same argument with Jonathan Taylor. And then the only one that's enticing to me, I don't know if I would draft him here. If he fell a little bit, I think I would draft him, is Damian Williams, just because of
there's a chance he starts for 3 or 4 weeks.
Sure, but if this offense doesn't look like what I'm projecting as far as, you know, Clyde Edwards-Helaire being the main guy, I still think Damian Williams is going to be involved. I don't think all the touches are going to go to Clyde Edwards-Helaire. But again, if that doesn't look the way that I'm projecting, then I do have a startable option because of how dynamic the offense is. And then there's upside. He's a league winner. Same kind of argument with Kareem Hunt. He's a league winner if something happens to Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
If Clyde Edwards-Helaire was hurt in the preseason, we would draft Damian Williams in what, the early third round, right at the 2-3 turn?
Probably even do higher.
Early third, mid third is probably where I would be comfortable taking him.
Yeah. I mean, that's about where we were drafting him last year until the injuries happened, and the injuries obviously were a setback. But, Tags, I want to pick your brain on Sony Michel because it's funny. I said, okay, I would draft all these guys over Darius Geis. I don't know if I would with Sony Michel. Now, I was excited about Sony Michel earlier in the year because, you know, Tom Brady's leaving. What happens when Tom Brady's not the quarterback? They run the ball a ton. This offense always produces fantasy running backs. It's just kind of as a group, right? And Sony Michel was the lead back. He got foot surgery. I'm not talking after the season. I'm talking he got foot surgery in May. I'm not drafting this guy.
Yeah, Sony Michel has been wildly inefficient in terms of, like, his opportunity. He's failed in both years. He's been horrendous, actually. I can't defend it. And Sony Michel was someone I liked coming out of college. He's been terrible in the pros. Damian Harris, I would rather take a flyer on him in the last round of your draft because right now he's going undrafted. But Sony Michel, I don't see the upside here. He doesn't catch passes. This offense isn't going to score as many touchdowns. You add in Cam Newton now. If you guys missed that, Cam Newton did sign with the Patriots for just $550,000.
Ridiculous.
There's a lot of incentives built into the contract, so he's going to make more than that. But at the same time, you start losing some goal line touches to Cam Newton that you wouldn't have lost to Tom Brady. It obviously isn't going to be as high scoring of an offense anymore.
Well, I don't know about that, man. I think Cam Newton right now is better than Tom Brady was last year.
Tom Brady was not great last year. Like, bottomly, he really wasn't. But at the same time, defenses can approach a team a lot differently when Tom Brady's not under center, whether you like it or not.
That's fair. But I think Cam Newton also does that just in a different way because of his rushing ability.
Well, they load the box
more.
I know
he's over 30 or whatever, but they signed him to a one-year contract. Are you kidding me that Bill Belichick's not going to run this guy into the ground?
No, I mean, I think Cam Newton, for his own sake, needs to protect himself. I mean, this is his livelihood, not about NFL career. But Cam Newton is older. He's been through surgery now, and he never had a great arm. So if I'm a defensive coordinator, I am loading the box against Cam Newton. I'm saying, you're going to beat me through the air, buddy. Ain't going to happen.
Is he even a lock to start? Like, I like Cam Newton, but they supposedly love Jarrett Stidham.
I mean, if you get into training camp and you're putting Cam Newton and Jarrett Stidham next to one another on the field, every single person on the field is going to be going, Cam Newton should be our starter.
Well, probably, but maybe Jarrett Stidham actually is really good. He was amazing in the preseason last year.
But they wouldn't sign, so they would not sign Cam Newton if they really believe that.
Well, if they really didn't believe it, why wouldn't they sign Cam Newton a lot sooner than July? Why would they risk letting anyone else sign him?
Apparently, it was like due to physical stuff. But here's a conspiracy thing that I actually believe. So the Bears obviously could have gotten Cam Newton, and then instead they traded for Nick Foles, because if you look at Nick Foles to Trubisky, you're like, okay, there's a competition here. But if the Bears were to have signed Cam Newton, there would have been no competition. Like, everybody would say, Cam Newton is our starter. He walks into the locker room and the team would be like, what the hell?
And you don't have to pay him $17 million like you do with Nick Foles or whatever.
That's what I'm saying. The Bears really should have made this move, but they didn't. And I think the reason is because they didn't want it like this. But if you bring in Cam Newton, he's going to be your starter. I am anticipating he is the starter week one, like, no matter what.
I think you're probably right. And I don't think we talked about this on the last show. So just really quick, where do you guys have Cam Newton ranked? I've got him QB 15 behind Ryan Tannehill, Joe Burrow, Baker Mayfield, in that tier of high upside QB2s.
I have him QB 15, right in between Drew Brees and Daniel Jones. I don't love him, honestly. I don't think he's going to rush the ball nearly as much as he used to. Quarterbacks over the age, I looked up running backs 31 and older, which is what Cam Newton is. There's been just three running quarterbacks who have rushed for over 500 yards. None of those quarterbacks rushed for more than four touchdowns. So you're lowering his totals as he goes on. The last time we saw him on the field as a passer, it wasn't great. And people have talked about this boosts the entire Patriots passing game. Bobby Yates, please answer me this question. How many times has Cam Newton thrown for more than 24 touchdowns?
One time. It was his career year where he had an 8.0 touchdown rate, which is unsustainable.
And that's it. That is it. Like,
oh, I'm sorry. It was 7.1. I exaggerated.
Yeah, to be 31 years old and have one season with more than 24 touchdowns, I mean, you needed your legs to be fantasy relevant. Let's be real about it. And Cam Newton, I just don't think his legs are going to be there. I think he's a streaming quarterback. I would rather see how it plays out rather than drafting him.
He hasn't thrown for over 4,000 yards since 2011. Yeah.
No, he doesn't throw for high yardage. I have, here's the reason why I have him at QB9.
Oh,
is because for the argument of what Tag said of, you know, there's a ton going against him, but I believe that, like Bobby said, that you sign Cam Newton and you run him into the ground. So I have him projected for 115 rush attempts. He had 130 a couple years ago. So, like, that's been consistently where he's been. So I am projecting 115 rush attempts. If that's the case, he's extremely valuable for fantasy football. However, I don't have him with a high yardage total or anything like that. So that's the argument. But then what Tag said as far as the historical data there, we've never seen a quarterback like Cam Newton. Cam Newton is a edge defender playing quarterback.
Well, right. And hold on a second. I'm going to use that against you, though. And the reason I say that is because a lot of mobile quarterbacks have been rails, you know, like Mike Vick and stuff like that, Lamar Jackson. These guys are really thin, and you have to worry about those hits they're going to take. Cam Newton, you're right. He is different. But at the same time, this is a negative for someone that's getting older, because your bones start to break down faster. Look at Jimmy Graham and Rob Gronkowski. Like, Tony Gonzalez played, you know, into his late 30s. Antonio Gates played for a while. These guys were just built differently, right? Cam Newton is built differently, and he was a dominating force for a long time. But again, he's now older, and taking that abuse, and like, he was a guy that you couldn't tackle.
And coming off major injuries, like two major injuries.
Yeah, a cornerback coming to try and tackle that guy, good luck. He's a linebacker in pads. This is basically what he is. But at the same time, he's going to fade as a rusher. Like, that's going to happen. And if he's not accurate as a passer, which he's kind of shown throughout his career,
he's still a lock for 400 rushing yards and 5 rushing touchdowns, though. Like, that's happening, period.
Here's the thing with Cam Newton, super quick, though. Like, I mean, if you go and look at what Cam Newton has been posting on social media, like, this dude is built. And
oh,
he
yeah,
looks 100%. Like he's fully healthy. And so, but here's the thing, too, to keep in mind, is that Cam Newton signing now, there is still this question mark. That's the reason why we're talking about it on the podcast. There's going to be the question mark of, is he actually the starter, or is Jarrett Stidham the starter? What that's going to do effectively is it's going to keep his ADP down. So then what the benefit here is that I can get Cam Newton in the last round of my redraft league, and he has insane upside. He starts week one against Miami. Miami Ooh. Took, you know, a big step forward this season as far as a defense, but I still think it's a phenomenal streaming matchup. The draft cost to acquire Cam Newton is not going to be that much. So if he does get injured, right, Tags, if he does, you know, your argument in what you're bringing up here, if he does get injured, okay, I just put him, I leave him on the waiver wire and I go stream. Because the cost to acquire him isn't that I'm drafting him at QB9. I believe he can finish there if he plays all 16 games. The cost to get him is not going to be that much.
Now, quick question. Yates, would you take Burrow or Cam Newton?
Man, that's super close. I would take Cam Newton, I think, because Burrow has a rough start to the schedule.
That's
his,
fair.
A rough start to the season. His schedule is pretty rough to start.
Chargers, Browns, Eagles, Jags. The Chargers, yeah. That week
the Chargers one. Particularly. I think the Browns are a fine matchup.
Like, if you're drafting a quarterback in this QB 8 to QB 15 range, you need them to start in week one, period. And if they're not, why draft them? So I'm not drafting Joe Burrow. Because I'm not starting in week one.
Unless you're going to platoon. I'm actually, I know like a lot of analysts are opposed to it. I'm not against platooning quarterbacks. Like if you have two quarterbacks in your roster and kind of platoon them, because it gives you the shot. Like Burrow, I do believe has top eight upside. And if you wanted to take someone like Daniel Jones with some mobility, obviously, but he's playing Pittsburgh, the Bears, and the 49ers.
That was the wrong example. But like Jimmy G has a really good week one matchup, something like that. Or you could just go Tyrod Taylor for the first 9 weeks because he's got nine straight great matchups.
But he might not start, Bobby.
We got to get going. I just have one more stat. On Cam Newton. He finishes the QB3, QB4, QB3, QB1, QB2 in the seasons he played a full season. And then in 2018, before he got his shoulder injury, he was the QB3 through nine games. This is all we've ever seen from Cam Newton. I get it, he's old, but if he's healthy, he's the man.
I thought he was QB17 like two different years.
He didn't play the full season, man. He was hurt.
Well, he wasn't good though. I mean, like he wasn't good those years. Like
sure.
He was bad.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's keep moving here. I just want to get your guys' ranks on these four that we mentioned because we all agree they're gross. How would you rank Sony Michel, Marlon Mack, Damian Williams, Kerryon Johnson tags?
Gross. That's how I rank them.
Just don't draft any of them. Can we just say that?
Yeah, I'm not drafting any of them, honestly. I'm really not. Like, okay. I won't.
Like, if Damian Williams drops to the 10th round,
I'll take him
after
there.
Tony Pollard and Alexander Mattison are all off the board, Latavius Murray, then you've got Damian Williams as the fourth best handcuff in football.
Yeah, I mean, well, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, if you take him in the third round and then you get Damian Williams in the 10th or 11th, I'm fine with that.
Yeah, he's not going to last till the 10th, though. He's going in the 8th round, which is crazy to me. Yates, you already mentioned who you like of these. You would maybe draft Damian Williams, but not especially interested. Who after these guys do you like more than this tier? Like, for me, I'll name mine really quick, okay? I already mentioned Tony Pollard, Alexander Mattison. J.K. Dobbins is another handcuff I love, Latavius Murray. But also James White, Jordan Howard, Tariq Cohen. I like all these guys. Even Justin Jackson is up there ahead of some of the guys in this list.
I mean, I put it out on Twitter right before we recorded that Darius Geis is RB27 and Tariq Cohen is RB46. Like, what in the world? You know, like, that just doesn't make any sense. So, yeah, I would be going Jordan Howard is someone who I would like over these guys because he's the guaranteed starter. He's going to get goal line touches. J.K. Dobbins, for sure. He's kind of in that same camp of Kareem Hunt where I think he's going to have some standalone fantasy value because I believe he can be incredibly efficient in the limited touches that he's going to get. But again, Mark Ingram goes down. He's the league winner. You know, Keyshawn Vaughn is someone who's in that consideration for me personally. I believe in Keyshawn Vaughn's talent. We've talked about him quite a bit, though. Madison's ADP is certainly rising, though. People are buying into the potential that Dalvin Cook could hold out. And if that's the case, Madison's going to be a steal.
Yep, I agree with that. And look, I like Mike Boone a lot. He's not starting over Alexander Mattison, though. I'm not drafting Mike Boone, guys. I would love to see him get touches, but unless he gets touches, I'm not going to play him. Alexander Mattison is the guy who would get touches. He's also very talented. I don't think he's as talented as Mike Boone, but he's very, very good. And he's a great backup running back to own in case Dalvin Cook does hold out. Tags, who do you like over this tier? Guys outside of the 8th round that you would draft ahead of this group.
Yeah, I'd take Ronald Jones over someone that we talked about a long time ago, and that was Devin Singletary. I'll take Ronald Jones, the upside potential there with him in this offense. There's obviously a lot of scoring potential with all the firepower they have on offense. I do believe he starts the year as the starter. Can he lose it? Sure, but investing a mid-round, late-round pick in Ronald Jones, no issue with that. Tariq Cohen was one of those guys on my list that I wanted to talk about.
So all three of us, yeah.
He's continually getting opportunity, and you might say that he's not going to get a whole bunch of carries, but the targets are worth more than those. He is used, and it's a two-man show in Chicago. There's nobody else that's going to – I don't see anybody else on that roster getting more than 15 touches on the year. So
right. I mean, Cohen has back-to-back 70 reception seasons.
Yeah, he's a safe flex player. Like, you don't have to sit here and worry, like, oh, is he going to score points? He's always going to score points. You're hoping for some of those weeks that he had back in 2018 that allowed him to finish as a top 10 fantasy running back. James White, I definitely disagree with. I don't like him without Tom Brady out there. I've moved him down quite a bit. But Tariq Cohen is someone that is young. Obviously, he's a big part of that offense. And then, as you guys mentioned, Jordan Howard and Matt Breida. Those are two guys that I believe should go over, some of the guys that we've talked about, like Kerryon Johnson and even Darius Geis. I don't I can't come around to drafting Darius Geis. I wasn't like the biggest fan of him out of college, but I figured he's going to have a workhorse role. He's been through so many surgeries now, and they've signed so many running backs. It's a new coaching staff that has nothing to do with him. I want nothing to do with Washington running backs, and I'm okay with that. If I miss on him, I'm okay with it.
I'll take a flyer on Antonio Gibson in the last round, though.
I don't want
him
either.
Yeah, Tags, I said this on the last podcast with Joe. I said that I think, as far as players to avoid, Darius Geis was on my list, and I said I think Darius Geis is more likely of a candidate to be cut than he is to be the clear starting running back. So I don't think, I'm not sitting here saying that Darius Geis is going to be cut. I'm not projecting that. But as far as like a likelihood that he's going to be the clear starter, I don't see that happening.
So I disagree with you on James White. I want to defend him really quick just because here's the thing. I get it. Cam Newton always had a very high A dot until he didn't. And when he hurt his shoulder, maybe that was why he wasn't thrown downfield as much. Maybe he just became a different quarterback because he did complete 67% of his passes when his career mark was under 60%. And he threw the ball to Christian McCaffrey, and I get it. It's Christian McCaffrey, so he's going to get more targets. But 42 more times than any wide receiver on the team, his A dot plummeted. Is this just who he has become? And if it is, wouldn't you want James White? I mean, James White also has a chance to lead this backfield in carries. If Sony Michel,
no, they would never do that. They'd go to Rex Burkhead before they went to him.
Yep.
You think they'd go to Rex Burkhead? Is he even going to make the roster?
Maybe not. Who knows? But Damian Harris would.
Okay. Sure. Okay. That's fair.
But yeah, though, there's no way that happens. But James White, it's just more about the offense, the volume of the passing attack, because Brady always dropped back to throw the ball 620 times. And if we're cutting that back to 500 to 525, there's 100 targets that are all of a sudden gone.
And there's also 100 extra carries out there.
Well, yeah, but again, James White is not a guy that they're going to give carries to. If you're going to do that, you're going to say they're going to have a three-way timeshare. They're going to bring in a Rex Burkhead or a Damian Harris to handle some of the workload with Sony Michel, because their defense is still good. They're not going to win the ball throwing the ball anymore. They're not going to throw it 40 times a game like they did with Brady. So removing those pass attempts, it filters throughout every position. And then you have to say, okay, well, N'Keal Harry is clearly going to have a bigger role. Like, they need him to have a bigger role as a former first round pick, as a guy that they need to bloom and blossom, because otherwise his career will just fade like Kevin White. They signed a couple tight ends in the third round, drafted a couple tight ends that are going to be more involved than the tight ends were last year, because, well, the tight ends just weren't involved. So there's just so much in this offense that I'm worried about. And James White is someone that I was drafting every single year and saying he was a value in fantasy football drafts. But for some reason now, he's actually going higher than I expected him to. He's going around the same place that he was when Tom Brady was still on the team. And he's not as valuable without Tom Brady, in my opinion.
You know what, guys? Since we've talked about the Patriots so much, I just want to throw this out there. Devonta Freeman's still sitting out there as a free agent. And if Sony Michel's coming off the foot injury, that could be a really interesting landing spot.
At first glance, it's interesting. I think they're so cap strapped right now. They're so
that's
up
true.
Against the cap
that's
that, that's the reason why Cam Newton is only making $550,000, but it's incentive laden. So,
right.
Yeah.
And Freeman has made it clear that he's not signing a cheap deal. So we'll see.
All right, guys, I want to transition and talk about some coaching changes now. And we've got a handful of them to talk about, but we also, it's not just about who the head coach is. It's about who the play caller is going to be. So let's look at the new situations here. We'll start out with the Carolina Panthers. And granted, there's not many fantasy relevant players on this team, but Matt Rhule is the coach. Who's the play caller, Tags?
That's Joe Brady. Obviously, there's a lot of excited people about this because he's coming off one of the most historic seasons in college football. And it's tough to not get excited, but at the same time, college is a lot different than the pros. And there have been a lot of coaches that have come from college and failed in the pros. But if there's one thing to be excited about is that Matt Rhule did hire a good offensive mind, and they're going to need it because that defense is going through a rebuild. My concern with the Panthers, though, is the offensive line. That offensive line is horrendous. I was looking through it.
That's your one concern? Like, isn't the whole team a concern?
Well, it is. No, but I'm talking about more for the offense fantasy standpoint. Teddy Bridgewater getting destroyed behind that line. But Joe Brady, are you excited about this, Yates? And is this an offense that, like, a team that you're attacking in fantasy because he's their play caller?
I will be in future years. I think the Panthers have done a masterful job of setting themselves up well for the future, where Matt Rhule he's just rebuilt programs everywhere he's been. And so if you're talking about a team that is now entering into a rebuild, this is the guy who you want leading that charge.
Yes, I agree.
I think Joe Brady is a phenomenal hire. Joe Brady at LSU last year as the offensive coordinator, mainly responsible for Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase, Justin Jefferson, and Terrace Marshall, Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
Incredible. Historically incredible season.
Yeah, they excelled because of Joe Brady and what he did. So And then he's coming from, he was previously with the New Orleans Saints as a, I think the quarterback's coach or an offensive assistant. So he has been learning under Sean Payton. He brought that scheme to us, LSU, and is now bringing it to Carolina. So as far as like long-term and in future years, I will be targeting a lot of these players. I still think there's value this season though with DJ Moore and Robbie Anderson specifically. I think those are two guys who I'm going to be targeting because this defense isn't great. And they're going to need to be throwing the ball a ton, and that leads to a ton of targets. So, yeah, I think there's fantasy value here this year.
You know, if you're a Panthers fan, with Rule coming in and Joe Brady, you have a lot to be excited about. Now, granted, you're not going to win more than 5 or 6 games this season, but what that means is you're going to be able to go out and you're going to get Trevor Lawrence or Justin Fields or Trey Lance. And if you get one of these three guys with this coaching staff, it is going to be a blast in a couple of years. So get excited, Panthers fans. From a fantasy perspective, yeah, we have a lot to be excited about too. What about the Cleveland Browns situation, though? They go out and get Kevin Stefanski. He's going to call the plays. We saw what he did with the Vikings last year. The passing game disappeared. Is this going to happen for Odell Beckham, Jarvis Landry, Austin Hooper, Baker Mayfield? Should we be worried about this, Yates?
I think worried is a relative term. I think as you're looking at the offense and you're looking at the weapons where Austin Hooper, David Njoku, like these two tight ends in Stefanski's offense last year did not see a ton of targets. We can look back and we can look at Kyle Rudolph and Irv Smith's targets and we can go like, how in the world were we considering them for fantasy? So Austin Hooper and David Njoku do not have a high ceiling this year. Njoku's irrelevant. Hooper doesn't have as much of a ceiling. However, you're talking now about Odell Beckham and Jarvis Landry, who are still going to see plenty of targets. And this offense, Baker Mayfield thrives off play action, which is what this offense is going to be built upon with phenomenal running backs like Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. So we could be seeing less of an overall target total than we've seen in previous years for Jarvis Landry and Odell Beckham, but we could see their touchdown totals go up because of the efficiency. So they're intriguing to me, especially when you factor in their draft costs right now that we're not drafting Odell as a top 5 receiver anymore. He has the potential because he's one of the most talented wide receivers in the entire NFL. But I think that, you don't have to pay up as much for Odell this year.
Sure. Tags, what do you want to add to it, man?
I mean, Stefanski, I'm a little hesitant to believe in the offense overall. Obviously, signing Jack Conklin in free agency and then drafting Jedrick Wills. I'm interested in to figure out who's going to play left tackle, though, because those guys are both right tackles in my mind. But clearly, they want to run the ball. But Stefanski is given credit for a lot of the Vikings' success last year. But I don't know if that's Gary Kubiak. Kubiak has been like a run game guru and a guy that showed up as the assistant head coach in Minnesota last year, and then all of a sudden it happens. So I don't know if this has more to do with Kubiak than it does Stefanski. We're going to find out, but it seems like they're moving pieces around. And I don't even want to say that Njoku is irrelevant, because if they're going to run a lot of two tight end sets like they did in Minnesota, then you're going to see both him and Austin Hooper on the field. And they also drafted Harrison Bryant in the 4th round, which makes me think they are going to run a lot more two tight end sets. So yeah, I'm intrigued about Stefanski as a play caller. He's a younger guy. Those guys typically are able to change their ways. They're not set in their ways like some of the older guys. So it's exciting, but at the same time, a little hesitant.
All right, guys, moving on over to the New York Giants. Joe Judge is the new coach. He's not going to be calling the plays though, is he, Tags?
No, it's going to be Jason Garrett. Jason Garrett came over from the Dallas Cowboys. And it might be one of those things where Jason Garrett is a better offensive coordinator than he is a head coach. But again, it's difficult to say because it's been so long since he's been an offensive coordinator, right? He's been the head coach there for a while and finally gave up play calling duties and all this and that. But it's not a bad thing for the offense to have a proven play caller that actually can get things done. Now, granted, he had a lot of talent to work with in Dallas, but he has a lot of talent to work with in New York too. Knows the team pretty well. I think this is a good thing for them. And again, you have a defense on the defensive side of the ball that the Giants have almost no talent there. I don't even know what they're doing. I thought that there was a chance that they might go defense in the draft, but they decided to build in their strengths and say, we're going to make our offense as good as possible. So knowing that they have Jason Garrett there as an established play caller, I'm excited for them. I just think it's going to be a little hit or miss between almost everybody on that team outside of Saquon Barkley.
Yeah. Yates, do you have anything you'd like to add, buddy?
Jason Garrett called plays for the Cowboys from 2007 to 2012. And in that time span, the Cowboys were consistently a very pass happy team. And that should continue here again in New York. So when we're talking about the offense year over year, they were very pass happy last year with Pat Shurmur as the OC and head coach there. So I don't think a ton is going to change as far as the offensive philosophy. So kind of just consistent, you know, moving from year to year.
Yeah, and a lot of people hear, okay, the Giants are going to pass a lot. And man, that really sucks for Saquon Barkley. Maybe I won't keep him at two. But like, is there a chance that Saquon Barkley leads this team in targets? Back in 2018, Odell Beckham led the team in targets with 124. Saquon had 121, guys.
Yeah, there were a lot of injuries that year, right? Even Beckham was hurt for part of that year. But
Sterling Shepard played all 16 games.
But yeah, that was Eli. That was non-mobile Eli that would check down all the time, whereas Daniel Jones wasn't right, checking down as much.
Yeah, and he didn't have Golden Tate. He didn't have Darius Slayton.
Right. None of them were on the field at the same time, which is crazy. That Giants offense, like, even with the offensive line that they've added Andrew Thomas to, and then Matt Pert in the third round, like this really can be a good team. Like, there's a lot of talent on the Giants offensive side of the ball.
All right, guys, this is the one that I'm worried about because Kellen Moore is a great play caller. Is he still going to call the plays in Mike McCarthy's system? I do not want McCarthy to take over.
Yeah, I think he is.
I think so, too.
By the way, this is for the Cowboys, if you guys don't know.
Right. I think he is going to remain the play caller because it was a choice that McCarthy had. Does he want to keep Kellen Moore or bring in his own guys? And he said Moore did a good job, so I'm happy.
He's the best. I think he's the best that there is besides Sean McVay at this.
Yeah, and Mike McCarthy, like, I gave Mike McCarthy a lot of crap when he was with the Packers because I felt like he was just riding on a lot of talent, and he took a year away from the game, and he said that I need to reevaluate things, and he started talking with coaches, trying to establish a crew that he could bring with, and that's a sign of being willing to change, and that's all I ask for in a coach is say, I know this isn't working, so I need to do something else. You know, like, I give him credit for that, and I hope he turns his career around because, again, I think he underperformed in Green Bay, but keeping Kellen Moore on there as the play caller, I'm excited about that.
Me too, man. Yates, are you as excited about Kellen Moore?
Yeah, I think it makes it really easy for us to project, you know, year to year. So Kellen Moore did a really good job last year, and it's exciting when you're talking about this Cowboys offense with weapons like Blake Jarwin, CeeDee Lamb, Amari Cooper, Michael Gallup there, and then Zeke and Pollard out of the backfield. This is going to be a very, very dynamic offense again in 2020.
I guess we should probably talk about the Broncos and Pat Shurmur as well. We'll get to that in just a second, okay? But Washington has Ron Rivera as the coach. He's not calling the plays. It's going to be Scott Turner. What kind of scheme is this, Yates?
It's going to be what we've seen in Carolina the past couple of years. Scott Turner is North Turner's son. He was the quarterback's coach in Carolina the past couple of seasons underneath, you know, his dad as the OC. So this is going to be a very, very similar system to what we've seen. And, you know, Terry McLaurin's going to be great again this year. Antonio Gandy-Golden, I think, is going to get on the field, has a higher draft capital than Kelvin Harmon, and obviously, you know, was selected by this coaching staff. So it's very, very similar. You kind of just look at the numbers at what Carolina has done historically and just kind of plug that in for Washington. However, I don't believe that they're going to be as effective and efficient, you know, with Dwayne Haskins, you know, behind center, and then kind of these mix of running backs there, which we've talked about.
Tags, I don't think anyone especially cares about the playmakers for Washington from a fantasy perspective. You can add something if you want to, but otherwise, let's talk about Pat Shurmur with the Broncos.
Yeah, I mean, Washington, it is what it is. That team, that offensive line, no left tackle. It's pretty ugly. And I think that Ron Rivera made the mistake that Vic Fangio did in Denver. And obviously, you know, we're about to talk about Denver, and they moved on from their new play caller that they had in 2019. Scott Turner is walking into a bad situation, not an established play caller. I am absolutely worried about that offense. But going over to Pat Shurmur, fantastic offensive coordinator, not such a great head coach. It's one of those things, like, we talked about the Browns for so long with Hugh Jackson, and I said, you know, Hugh Jackson was just a bad head coach. He was terrible. He couldn't manage it, but if he was just stuck with the offense as a coordinator, he would have been fine. It might be the same thing with someone like Vic Fangio, where some guys just make better coordinators than they do head coaches because there's just too many things they have to worry about.
Like Hugh Jackson. Hugh Jackson was a good coordinator.
He was, yeah, in Cincinnati. He was fine there. So that's what I'm saying is some guys are like that. And I think that Vic Fangio had to learn that the hard way is that, okay, I have to trust someone else with my offense that's actually established and just give him the offense. Pat Shurmur being able to run the offense in Denver is awesome because he has been a great coordinator, and I'm really excited to see this team in action. The question is, how much freedom does Vic Fangio give Pat Shurmur? You know, if this team is winning, you know, by 10 points, is he going to allow Pat Shurmur to keep his foot on the throttle? Is he going to say, no, Pat, we are a running team. We are running the football, which is possible with an older, you know, defensive-minded head coach that just wants to sit on the ball. But Pat Shurmur, with all the talented pieces they have there in Denver, it's exciting.
Yates, when I hear Pat Shurmur, I think slot receivers. I am so excited about what he's going to do with this offense. if he's actually given the liberty to make his own decisions here.
This is the tension. You know, Tags mentioned it with Vic Fangio, a defensive-minded coach. Typically, they are more willing to rely on the run game. And now you have very effective running backs with Melvin Gordon and Philip Lindsay. So I think those two running backs, why would you, you know, take the ball out of their hands consistently? So I think they're going to have, they have the weapons. They have the weapons to succeed this year as a team with Cortland Sutton, Jerry Jeudy, KJ Hamler. I mean, Noah Fant. These are just really, really, you know, exciting weapons. That's, you know, something that I'm definitely interested to see how this plays out. It's going to be, you know, the preseason's cut down to two games now. Those are going to be two games that I'm watching closely is Denver to see what does this offense look like. Are they relying on the pass a ton or are they going to be keeping it on the ground?
All right, guys, that's all for today's show. I do want to remind you guys that we've got a giveaway going on. Also, congratulations to Lee for winning the Fielder's Choice signed wallet. Our giveaway going on right now, we're giving away a signed DeAndre Hopkins full-size Cardinals helmet. You can check out the details for that at fantasypros.com/contest. What we're basically looking for is you go to Apple Podcasts or Stitcher, send us a screenshot of the review at contest@fantasypros.com. And don't forget to check out Pristine Auction. You guys are going to love it there. Everything is guaranteed authentic from only the most trusted sources. Again, that's pristineauction.com, P-R-I-S-T-I-N-E, auction.com. Also, check out that Game Changers podcast with Dan Harris. You guys are going to love it. It's where we're featuring all of these industry favorites like Mike Wright, Brad Evans, Jake Seeley. We're talking to Scott Fish from the Scott Fish Bowl at the Game Changers podcast to learn how they blaze their way into the industry. For Kyle Yates and Mike Tagliere, I'm Bobby Sylvester. Thanks for listening and enjoy your football. I just wanted you to watch me dissolve.
Managing your diabetes just got easier. The powerful new Dexcom G7 lets you see your glucose numbers on your compatible watch and phone without finger sticks. And because Dexcom G7 is the most accurate CGM system, you can be confident in your food, exercise, and medication decisions. And all those decisions can lead to big results, like more time in range and lower A1C. Get started at Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com/compatibility.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.